Well, once again, here's the map. Are you ready? For the map, once again. So let's go, you are ready for the map, man. So let's go to do some from this map.
Beatbox Al. Bring it live.
Not happening.
Actually, not live, because people are going to get this like a day or two, like a week later, so it's not that live.
No, I think this will be discovered by aliens in a couple centuries. This is a reflection of human culture. Amazing. Fascinating.
Well, we're going to keep it real tonight. How about bringing it raw? Bringing it raw from the Five and Dime. You know what the Five and Dime is?
Well, 510, I would.
Yes! I just heard that the other day. I'm a nerd. I just heard that the other day. 510.
I just heard that right now. Thank you for...
That could be our new intro. Bringing it raw or some, bringing it something.
Uh-huh. Do we really bring it raw? I mean, you could get salmonella, but, you know.
That's true. E. coli, right, perhaps.
It's just not hygienic.
Yeah. But on an island... Sometimes you have to keep it raw.
Yeah, you have
in Japan,
to,
everything's raw.
It is.
Hawaii, perhaps? They got their poke.
Poke, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah.
The Five and Dime.
The Five and Dime.
That's a good one. Why have I not heard that before? I just must be living under a rock.
No, I just heard it like a week ago from a coworker.
Well, you must be living under a rock.
I am living under a rock.
So what's our album this week?
Our album on Island Style Podcast.
Oh, nice way to work in the title of the podcast. Good job.
We're gonna discuss Things Fall Apart by the
legendary
classic hip hop group The Roots.
Ah, it's exciting.
Philadelphia's own.
We're leaving the state of California.
We are
for the first time.
We are
our third podcast.
Going from the Five and Dime to the 215.
Oh, nice.
dropping some bombs and knowledge and all that good stuff.
That's good. Yeah. That's great.
Shout out to our peeps in Philly.
Do you know anybody in Philly?
I do.
Oh.
My sister-in-law, she's in Philly. So.
Okay, right on.
Not at this moment, but...
Have you visited? Have you eaten a cheesesteak?
I have not. I am excited to go. I was thinking maybe we should... I should go this year to Philly.
Sure.
For multiple reasons, but yes, one being the food. I want to try these famous. Isn't there like two famous cheesesteak shops that are like lined up against each other, like rivals, like Gino's and something?
Yeah.
Chicago Pizza.
That's Chicago Pizza. But no, I feel like that's an exciting attraction. There's a lot of like history to that city. There's some good sports teams.
So, Black Thought and Questlove. Two of the big figureheads of the Roots. Do they eat cheesesteak? I feel like
no,
Black Thought is a vegetarian.
I think he's like even vegan, maybe.
Both of them or just Black Thought?
I don't know, but I will say I've been wanting to get this off my chest because it's been weighing on me. You know, we recently learned that our first podcast, we might have been hitting below the belt or around the belt area, if you will. In referring to Lyrics Borden's weight, and like, you know, we're just clowning.
Right.
You know, it doesn't, that's superficial. It's really a person's heart and mind and, you know, their lyricism.
Their energy, their stage presence,
their aura. Yeah. And what they do to lift up hip-hop.
Right.
And so, you know, we're just having a little fun. But apparently, he's skinny now. Wow. And so what I'm trying to say is that Questlove, if you look at his image or his body over the years.
Okay.
He used to be kind of big. He used to, you know, and then he underwent, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, this radical, he just dropped all this weight, and it was almost scary. It made me a little bit like, wow, what happened? What'd you do?
I do vaguely remember that, seeing pictures and his face looking like gaunt.
Gaunt is the word, yes.
Yeah, definitely. But going back real quick, thank you for bringing that up, just as to rehash the Lyrics Born podcast. Because of our podcast, he has lost weight in the last 2 weeks.
Right. Well, you know,
dramatically, we've changed his life basically.
Yeah, we should say other things about like the state of the world, because you know,
and then it'll change.
Yeah, we could bring world peace
right.
through our podcast.
We should be like, you know, I think Republicans should just not say anything. I'm just kidding. And then they won't, and it's going away. I don't know. Just yeah, kidding,
that's
just kidding.
That's a great idea.
But I think Questlove, you know, and it's, I don't know, maybe it's a diet thing, maybe it's, do you think he had like a lap band? I don't know.
It's hard to say, you know. I mean, they're successful, and successful people, you know.
Lipo.
They have access to these things. Maybe. But no, I feel like if you look at, you know, as far as the figures within hip-hop and just sort of within popular culture, I feel like his image just seems shining to me, right? I feel like sort of like not just musically but like philosophically, he projects a sense of like something that you can look up to, you know, mm-hmm. that you can feel really good about. So
and just seeing speaking of the words, I don't know if you've ever seen Dave Chappelle's Block Party.
I have wanted to, but I have not.
Okay, I will lend it to you tonight.
Nice!
Because I have it. And it gives you a great insight into not only the roots, but Questlove in particular, because he's a big part of throwing this Block Party with Dave Chappelle. I think they're good friends. He helped him out in throwing it. And it was cool. He was like, honestly, just a real cool dude. Pretty funny guy. Real witty. It just seemed like an all-around general nice guy. So it's like you feel good when you see that. It's like you're behind the right group, you know. Your fans, not only because of the music, but you know, good peeps, I think.
Right. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, as far as this things fall apart, like, and you look at ideological perspective of the music, I was looking at the cover is overtly political, right? I mean, there's, you know, it's showcasing America's brutality and oppression of black people, and I think that that's like a bold move as far as an album cover, and I feel like, it's a departure from the previous, you know, two. I mean, I don't know. I'm not familiar because, you know, I'm just a poser with those first whatever early back when they were, you know. Playing Tuesday nights at whatever South Philly joints and struggling. Exactly. They're like working the cheesesteak house and
playing for food. They're playing for cheesesteaks.
Right. But anyway, like, you know, I feel like that's like I think that's admirable when a group chooses to do that.
Right.
I don't know that the music itself is you know, has, well, I don't know. It's so, the lyrics are so dense that, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of awesome Huey Newton radicalism in there. But
right. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I always noticed that about that album in particular, but I guess maybe just Black Thought in general. Like, lyrically, he's phenomenal. He can just, like, spit out a bunch of rhymes just, you know, rapidly and just, you know, really quick. But at the same time, it's like, they just go from here to there, from, you know, from A to Z, and it's there are times when it's hard to follow, like what kind of thought, at the same time though, it's like I think you just enjoy it for what it is sometimes, you know. I think that's at first, I think when I first started listening to that, you know, Things Fall Apart, I was like, oh, I don't understand what he's going at, you know, getting at, and I don't understand what the theme of this song is supposed to be, or this or that, whatever.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
But then there's a point when it's like, no, you just go with it, you know.
It's just
top of your head, almost like a freestyle. You just, you know, first thing comes to mind, you know, and it works. It's for me, it works, you know.
Yeah,
and I think I enjoy it now, you know.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
No, most definitely. And I think, you know, as I feel like another aspect that they bring to the table that's different. And I'm not saying anything, you know, wildly intelligent here, but as a live band, I think that, you know, that's not something. I mean, I don't know. How much of that element has existed within hip-hop, you know, are they are the pioneers of that, right? Or am I way off base? Am I omitting some late 1970s, you know, anyway?
I don't know. I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know. I think they're definitely the group that put live hip-hop on the map and kind of made it what it is. There were not too many, at least mainstream groups, have followed them. Like, I don't know too many other, like, live hip-hop acts, live bands that are, you know, have had that success, you know? I know a lot of, like, quote-unquote underground groups, especially around here in the Bay, Mission, or formerly known as Mission, I forget what they're called now. Crown City Rockers, sorry, oh, there you go. Okay. Formerly known as Mission. They have a live band in Japan. There's Loop Junction.
Uh-huh.
I think they always touted as, like, the Japanese roots, whatever. But
really?
But, yeah, as far as, like, big major label groups, I don't know too many.
Yeah.
And before them, I definitely don't know. You know,
does that hold them back at all? I mean, do they not gain a larger audience because of that? Or does that just gain them a different audience?
I think it definitely gains them a different audience. Definitely. I don't think it gives them as much radio play because they're not going to get these, like, kind of poppy, catchy loops, you know, throughout their music. I think you get the quote-unquote college crowd you know, that listens to them, you know.
So then tie that to the Denzel Wesley Snipes quote that kicks off the album. What is that? What are they saying?
Yeah, and I just never thought of that until now. It's like, well, it's funny. That the way they start off the album, it's a line or a scene from Mo Better Blues.
Yes.
And that is one of the most memorable openings of any CD I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just, you always remember that opening, you know?
Yeah.
And you look in the audience. you see Japanese. You see Slavova. You see anything but our people.
It makes no sense. Like.
It incenses me. Our own people don't appreciate our culture and music. You grandiose motherfuckers know the shit that we like. It's just, but I think they probably at that time when they put it in, that's probably what they were feeling, right?
And you are all.
But we don't even come to see our own, man. Listen, you know, if we had depend upon black people to eat, we would starve to death.
Everybody, wake up.
Hey, you've been out there. You know, you own the bastard. You look out to the audience. What do you see? You see Japanese. You see West German. You see Slavovic. Anything. Except our people, man. It makes no sense. It incenses me that our own people don't realize our own heritage, our own culture. This is our music.
That's bullshit.
Why? It's all bullshit. Everything you just said is bullshit.
What are you complaining about?
I'm talking about the people.
That's right. The people don't come because you grandiose motherfuckers don't play shit that they like. If you played the shit that they like, then the people would come. Simple as that.
And this is just, you know, going completely off of, like, similar. So I've never seen the Roots live, so I've never been to a show. I couldn't say their demographics at a show.
Yeah.
But similar bands that I've seen or similar groups that I've seen going to their shows, you're going to see a lot of college-age white guys.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like you're going to see that for most, you know,
socially conscious underground, quote-unquote underground type hip-hop guys.
And you might even see that for the not social. I mean, I've never been to a Lil Wayne show, but, like, I'm sure there are plenty of white people there, you know, like.
I saw, like, a 10-year-old kid today with a Lil Wayne shirt on. It was hilarious.
What did it say? Just Lil Wayne.
This is Lil Wayne with his fake mug on it.
It's a little more witty. I've been to two Roots shows, one at the Shoreline and one at the House of Blues in Chicago. And I don't really remember who was there. I do remember. So the first one, it was a tour of Rage Against the Machine and Wu-Tang Clan.
Ooh.
And Wu-Tang dropped out. And so, and Hector will enjoy this. apparently, the boys at Hermanos Unidos do not like the Wu. They were in it for the Wu-Tang.
What up, Hector?
So then, after after they dropped out, he had tickets on his hands.
They just didn't want to go.
Yeah, they were like, roots. What? So he was gracious enough.
How was the show?
It was awesome. I loved it. And like Questlove had this like 20-minute drum solo. It was like the highlight of it as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And I have to say, I'm not a Rage Against the Machine fan, but like that was kind of fun too.
Really?
Yeah.
What's Zach De La Rocha doing these days?
I think he's some political,
he's burning something.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Something.
Yeah.
Yes. Many things. the mind boggles at the possibilities. But yeah, no, they were really good. And then I forget what they were touring off of. I mean, that must have been around the time of Things Fall Apart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I went for my birthday to the House of Blues for that show, and I don't know what album they were pushing at the time.
Was it Phrenology?
It might have been.
I feel like you told me about this when you went. Was the House of Blues in Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, it was a good show too.
So who, when you saw them both times, different lineups, same lineup, as far as like the band members?
So I don't know. See, that's the thing. They have so many, and like a couple of those dudes had like, well, somebody, Malik B, have like a heroin problem or something.
Perhaps.
He didn't like, he was on and off with the group. I feel like maybe Leonard Hubbard left them in the last few years. Or I'm just making that. I shouldn't say stuff like that because then like
you're gonna sue
them. Well, I'm not gonna get sued, but it's just gonna be like what little credibility I have goes out the window. But anyway, I mean, I feel like and then Scott Storch does not perform with them anymore.
He performs with Paris Hilton now.
Yes.
It's his priority.
I read this profile about that guy, and I was like, I don't like him.
Yeah.
That guy seems wild.
I'm kind of glad maybe he doesn't tour with them anymore.
Perhaps.
Yeah. It's disappointing.
And then I don't remember. And then the dudes with the, Razel, the godfather of noise, and Scratch, is that what we decided his name was?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, that's pretty sweet when they do that thing with the, No, cannot. But anyway, so yeah, I don't remember the lineups too well.
But I guess, I mean, just maybe then just from that intro, though, that clip from Mo Better Blues, maybe that's something they dealt with? Or do you think it's something they dealt with or something that they don't really care about, they're just going to make the music they do, but other people have commented upon, so maybe they felt like they should kind of throw that in there?
I don't know. The liner notes, I was going over those, and they say, I don't know who wrote them, but they say something about how this is something that every black music act has to grapple with.
I agree. I think I definitely agree.
So I think that maybe they're doing it in a serious way.
I remember even, I don't know if you're telling me, if we read something, how, what's the Hieroglyphics here in Oakland?
Uh-huh.
Della Funk, Homo Sampion, and some of the other artists on that label talking about that. I don't know if we were talking about it, I read something in The Source, something like that. It was, how about, you look out at the audience now, it's like mostly non-black people in the audience, listening to their music,
Sure.
Yeah, exactly, something that they have to do.
I mean, I feel like just to be sort of contrarian or something. I mean, you could see that as like you are reaching people in different walks of life.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, a cynical person could say that. Well, what are you really reaching? How are you really bridging any kind of divide? What kind of connection are you making?
Right.
But I mean, I feel like you could say like this is a nice. It's not going to be like racial healing or something like that, but I do feel like there is,
it's bringing the world together.
It's kumbaya. Baby, it's kumbaya.
That should have been the title of this album, kumbaya. That's what it should have been.
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing, like we're talking about Black Thought's delivery, and like I don't know necessarily there's a message in this album. I don't know, I'm curious if they are Because if you look at that, if you look at that, that picture that's on the cover, that's a message. But I feel like if you listen to the disc, and maybe I just don't listen that well, it's just like, hey, this is our dope music. Listen to it, you know?
It's very just raw hip-hop, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
It's just dope beats, dope rhymes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A couple songs, they're definitely like a theme going on. Like, I think the first track that really got me hooked on this album was You Got Me.
Studying film and photo flash focus record. Says she working on a flick and cut my click through the score. She says she loved my show in Paris at Elise Momar, and that I stepped off the stage and took a piece of her heart. We knew from the start that things fall apart, intent to shatter. She like, that shit don't matter when I get home. Get at her through letter phone. Whatever, let's link, let's get together. Shit, you think not? Think the thought went home and forgot. Time passed, we back in Philly, now she up in my spot. Telling me the things I'm telling of is making her hot. Started building with her constantly round the clock. Now she in my world like hip hop and keep telling me, telling me, yeah.
Can you
that's always catching a flight, and sometimes I got to be out at the height of the night, and that's when she flipping get on some
another lonely night. Seem like I'm on the side.
Yeah, Erykah Badu.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, just it's a great, obviously the vocals on that are amazing, because Erykah Badu has an amazing voice. And then Black Thought, you know, the lines are pretty sweet though, because he's just telling this story of how he met this, you know, this love interest and their relationship and whatever. But something about you saw me on stage at Elise Momar. I don't know. I always like that. Kind of just kind of made me fantasize about some freaking sweet nightclub in Paris somewhere that I've never been to. I don't know. Kind of cool.
But that's like the only. I mean, again, like I just feel like I'm not a discerning enough listener. But that's the only song I can think of that tells. I think it's definitely the only one that tells a story.
Right.
And then as far as like, I mean, if you look like I was also, because you know my copy of the, this is gonna date me. My copy of the CD is scratched, and so I can't hear all the tracks. I was like, all right, well I'll go to YouTube, and then they give you all these options, and then you end up jumping to other albums. And I was listening to there's a track on Phrenology that's about like drug abuse, and it's clear that he's talking about like. You know, there. That's the theme of this, is like how people fall into that. And, you know, I don't know that I got any of that off of Things Fall Apart, even though I think it is my favorite Roots album. Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad that that doesn't happen.
Where were you when you first got this album?
I was in, like, Amoeba on Telegraph.
Nice.
And, I just saw it and I said, oh, I should buy this, because I had, or my roommate had Do You Want More. I remember my friend in high school showed me Do You Want More.
Okay.
And I was like, what a cool cover. I mean, like, I want a hat like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those guys look like they're really feeling something.
Right.
And, but then, you know, and then actually, you know, honestly, the first couple times I heard Do You Want More, I didn't really like it.
Okay.
Like, it was sort of an acquired taste, and now I love it, but anyway, so, you know, listening to that, and then I saw it, you know, at the store, and I bought it, and then senior year, that's part of the reason, like, I felt like we should talk about it for this podcast, because that was this. It was the same era of our lives as the Black Eyed Peas album.
Right. Junior, senior years of college. Yeah. Latter part of college.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely.
So
I think I got it after you. I think I got it because of you. I think I got it after you. And I remember I got it, I think right when we were graduating, senior year, or either we had or were about to graduate.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my album for that summer.
Yeah.
And just, I remember that. I think at first that was almost even kind of problematic, the fact that I couldn't really follow Black Thought's lyrics. I'm like, I can get into it, you know? It was, at that time, I was just like, I think I was really into Tupac.
Uh-huh, sure.
And it was like, he's always had some message and some story, and you can follow it, you know? And so I'm like, oh my God, I'm confused. I don't get it. What's Black Thought thing? You know, saying whatever, right? But then the more and more I kept listening and listening over and over and over again. And it's just, I think, again, that's when it dawned on me. It's like, it's just what it is, what it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. It's just, well, yeah. And I mean, I feel like that, again, speaks to his, I mean, it's going to be a different audience that they find with their, it's not just, it's an extension of their live instrumentation, right?
Right.
Like,
yes.
Like Tupac is, I mean, if you want, I feel like Tupac is, at base, he is socially conscious, you know, as a rapper, but we don't qualify him as such. But when you have, like, you know, a bassist and a keyboard player and, like, you know, a drummer and you have real instruments and your MC, like, has this avant-garde style, then, you know, it's going to feel like a different product, and it's going to alienate some people who want to hear a certain, like, you know, oh, these guys aren't thugs. These guys are, like, sissies.
Right.
And it's, I mean, I think that's unfortunate. I don't think a lot of people think that, but I do think some people think that.
Got it.
But yeah, I feel like, you know, as far as the album, like, defining, you know, you go through life. I think most people, regardless of what music they listen to, they have albums that will capture a period of their life.
Right.
You know? And, like, I feel like this is, like you're saying, like, this has the power to do that. My wife actually is able to recite large chunks of this album because it was part of a period of her life. It was actually after college while she was in her first job. And I think that's just what this, you know, it has, it's one, that's the sign of a really solid album is that when it does serves that capacity for you.
That's impressive. I would like to see your wife.
Well, I mean, well, some flow, dude. It was pretty good. I mean, there was some
Black Thought. Got it. No, man, because there's certain rappers that just their style is easy to follow.
Yes.
And Tariq or Black Thought is not.
Yes.
You know?
True.
Not that it makes it better. Actually, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And just to clarify that, I really enjoy his style now. Like, it's something about it. And I think you described it well, avant-garde. I think it's really a way to describe it. And it just, his voice, his delivery, everything are really, really appeals to me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he's hard to, it's not something, it's like, it's like not some like MC Hammer track where it's very like easy to follow.
Right, Yeah, no, I think, and that's, I think that's their appeal, you know, I think that's what makes them appealing.
Yeah. It's funny when I first got this album, listening to it, and I'll admit when I first got this album, I was starting to get into hip hop back then. I still wasn't like, I don't think full fledged hip hop head back then.
Okay.
But I was starting to get into it. So I wasn't savvy to other hip hop artists on the scene, you know, this and that. So I don't think until later years I realized a lot of the guests they had on the album.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even now when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, that's right. Like, Mos Def is on the album.
Yeah,
Common's on the album.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that a lot more now. That's one song, I think it might be, I forget what, the Double Trouble.
Yeah.
Fucking love that song.
Yeah,
it's just so, like, the timing is amazing. The way they do that.
Sure.
Either stand tall or sit the fuck down. All the way from 215 to Bucktown. Brace yourself, it's about to go down. Yo, too great, what's up? How your microphone sound?
Tight.
Well, I ain't showing what it's about. We got to blow up the spot because they must have forgot. We double trouble, bubble, and hop. Then check your stove top before you take a listen. And make sure beans don't burn in the kitchen. These gas up.
Well, but how do you feel about, I mean, it's not verbatim of...
Bubbling hot.
Yeah,
bubble,
like...
Bubbling hot. Wild style.
Yeah, it's not this, it's not, they don't, but it is...
It isn't that style.
But it, I mean, it's very close. Like, they're using the same stuff.
Right.
And like, do you feel like, because I mean, always in rap, you're going to be referring to other people's stuff, but I think the when you do it right, you do it with a little cleverness, and you don't use like a whole stanza. But like they're repeating those those, what are those dudes' names in that movie?
Man,
they're like, they're not, they're like,
Busy Bee? Was it Rocket Busy Bee?
No. It was, they were, those two dudes were sort of second tier in that movie.
Yeah. I forget their names right now, but yeah. I know you're talking about.
But I don't know. I feel like it's good to pay homage, but like, you can't just do, it's like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of like remakes in general, like covers.
But the whole track wasn't verbatim though, right?
It was just the hook, right?
Yeah. But I think it's okay. I mean, everything else, the verses were original. Just the hook was you know, basically verbatim.
Well, you know, but great. Actually what I, it's interesting, if I may, the, cause Mos Def did a remake of Children's Story, but he
really,
yes, but he flipped it on its head, completely, and it wasn't like gritty tale from the hood, like, you know, as children's allegory. It was like
about Calabasas.
It was about the recording industry.
Really?
Yeah, and it was like
Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, it was in New York, but that was how he flipped the script. If you will allow me to use a cliche,
I will.
Thank you. So, I mean, you know, edit anything out, please, especially when
fucking editing that part out.
Yeah, you should. Just edit out everything that I think. No, and like that was very clever. I actually, you know, God, see, whenever I stop like that, it's because I want to make a disclaimer, and I need to stop making disclaimers. You just fucking bowl right ahead. But in grad school, I did this presentation, or wrote a paper on Japanese hip hop, and I talked about how that particular song. Slick Rick's Children's Story gets remade in different contexts.
Right.
Mos Def redid it and used it to parody the recording industry. And then this, I mean, you know, but not that many other people know, this MC Zebra from Japan used it. He told it more traditionally. He stuck with the story, but he made slight changes to the story to fit a Japanese context.
Did he do it in Japanese? Because he speaks English.
Yeah, he did it in Japanese. Okay. And like, you know, there were no firearms, for example, right?
Okay.
And there was a couple other, like, I forget what the differences were, but it was like he adjusted it. But what I just thought it was clever that Mos Def did that. And I don't feel like when they do Double Trouble on Things Fall Apart, it's not like, I don't think they're...
But
they're just messing around. I mean, not bad. I'm
yeah. But I think what was awesome about Double Trouble on this album is, like, I feel like that was at a time where a lot of people weren't always, like, giving props or reflecting back on, like, old school hip-hop.
Yeah.
I think right after that, a couple years after that, it was all about old school hip-hop. People were getting back into Wild Style. Sure. Were getting back into all these, like... Crush Groove, all these old hip-hop albums, old hip-hop movies, right?
Yeah.
But back then, it was like, no one was really doing that. No one was paying homage to, like, you know, these old, like, these classic hip-hop albums, right? So I think in that respect, that's what it was like, kind of made it cool, you know?
Well, we talked about, and we can save it for if we do it, but, like, Drastic Five's Quality Control, that album is full of references to Wild Style and all that stuff. Right. I mean, that's just their whole shtick.
Yeah.
So they did. I don't know when that album came out. They were kind of doing that. But I think you're right. Like, people weren't necessarily doing that because, I mean, I think it's good. I think you know it's nice to pay homage, but it's also nice to, like, you know, do your own thing. One thing as far as paying homage though is funny because I remember watching. I think it was King of New York. It was some gang New York movie with Christopher Walken.
Okay.
And at the end, they do this video by this guy, Schoolie D.
Okay.
And, like, you know, my friends and I were watching this, and we were like, Schoolie D, that is the stupidest name I've ever heard. And then Black Shot name checks the guy on this album. It's like Schoolie D classic. I forget which song it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow. So I'm supposed to, like, be down with Schoolie D. was like, how embarrassing for me.
Okay, on a random tangent, speaking of like crazy old school hip hop names, have you heard of Jappy Jap?
No.
Dude.
Wait. Okay, yeah.
I was going to say, People Under the Stairs.
Yes, they have
a track called Jappy Jap. Yeah. I'm like, what the F?
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
And I looked it up, and he's like this old school hip hop head or rapper that I think he like.
Japanese?
He was not. He was not Japanese.
Go home.
But I think he hung out with like Melly Mel and with Brucey B.
Thing? Like now, like within, I don't know if it's hip hop, but within sports, you're like A-Rod. You know, it's first initial, second, first syllable. Back then, was it just like Pauly Paul, Ali Al? was that this?
We should bring that back.
Should we?
I think that should be our name. This is Pauly Paul. Not to be confused with Pauly D. You know who Pauly D is?
Tell me.
He's on that MTV show, Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah.
He's actually a DJ.
Oh.
Randomly enough, so.
Interesting. Yeah. So what do you feel like, how do you feel about, like, why is Questlove DJing? It's interesting to me.
But that's his kind of, his role, right? He's like the producer, right?
Okay.
So I think the producer is always DJ and they always drum.
He's like Don Henley.
Yes.
He leads the band from behind the drum kit.
Yes. Oh. Is there any other way to lead the band? I don't know. There probably is, but in front of the mic, I don't know. Has Questlove ever dropped any lines?
I don't think so.
That would be interesting.
It would be very interesting. That's a kind of a fascinating question.
Yeah.
I feel like he's done a lot of things, though. You know, like a lot of people, like, you know, Kanye was like, I'm not going to just produce, I'm going to, like, get behind the mic. And I feel like that's sort of a standard, you know, outlet for one's creative energies.
Right.
Like, you know. But I feel like Questlove has, you know, he branches out. He does things like DJing.
Right.
I feel like he was the one behind the John Legend collaboration, which we have it at home and. I don't know. I never really got into it. I feel
got
I
it.
Should.
Our friend that informed us that they had Lyrics Born is now skinny.
Yes.
So she saw the Roots this last weekend in the city.
Yeah.
Also saw them. And I guess they were doing a lot of tracks from, was it Wake Up? Is that the album with John Legend?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
So John Legend wasn't there, so they just had his voice or, the track taped, whatever.
Yeah.
And said it was not as good without,
I would imagine.
Yeah, taped and
to
stuff.
To be the
so.
Case. But, I didn't really think that it was all that. I don't know. I feel like you could revoke my 70s soul music credentials, but.
Totally revoked.
Yeah, gone.
They're blacklisted forever.
Yeah.
So one of my other favorite tracks on there, and I don't even know the name, this is bad, but it's the one with Common, I think. It's the one with Common. And is it the one with Common? I don't know. Oh my gosh, this is horrible. Well, I'll put it up. I'll put the track up so everyone can listen to it.
Okay.
But it's the one where towards the end or the end of the track, it kind of fades into this... the sample of like kind of violins kind of strumming in.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I don't know if you know.
I don't.
It's just really soothing. And I don't know. It's funny. I was walking around with my iPod on the other day and it comes on. And I noticed that whenever this particular part of this song comes on, it just puts me in a good place. Like it's just a great like transition, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just the whoever picked the sample or I don't think it's live. I don't think they have any live violinists, you know, in the Roots. So I'm assuming it's like a sample that Questlove put in.
Yeah.
But it's just awesome. And it's just one of my favorite parts. And it just, it really, for me, kind of defines that album. Because the album is like so many different things, you know. There's some hardcore, like hip-hop, old-school, just, you know, just flowing, you know, lyrics rhyming. And then there's some parts where it's just about, you know, the music and the tracks and the... kind of this jazz, you know, to it. So I don't know, it's interesting. I like it a lot. God is testing me. In retrospect, I see she brought life and death to me. Peace to us collectively. Live and direct when we perform. It's just coffee shop chicks and white dudes. Over I got into it with that nigga Ice Cube. Not a fight move to a life, making the right moves. Besides God and family, you my life's jewel. Like that, y'all. Like that, y'all. Like that, y'all. Like that.
hip hop, 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 hip hop.
Yeah, I don't remember, like you were saying, like, it didn't occur to me that there were all those guests on there.
Right.
But then, like, I pulled out the disc and it was like, it had the little sticker on it. I was like, featuring, and there's all these names.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I think that's, it's pretty keen.
Yeah.
And like, but I don't know, at the same time, like, I feel like that, you know, we were talking last time about the inclusion of the skit,
right,
you know, as like a album trope, and how that really was a negative. It grew to be a negative. And I feel like the guest was also a trope that, be, you know, it was just to fuel sales.
Right, right.
That's
right.
Clearly to fuel sales. I mean, the skit is just sort of like to fill time, but... you know, that's the sticker on the front, and it's right. Like, you know, you like Lil Wayne, so buy this because he's on this, even yeah. though you know, and I don't like that because I feel like, you know, oftentimes these dudes don't even know each other. They don't even meet in the same studio. They record right. their verse like in different studios,
different sides of the country. But I think that's what's different about this, at least this album in particular, is that Common, Mos Def, the Roots, they all know each other.
Yeah.
At least that's what I get again. That's what I got from Dave Chappelle's Block Party.
Okay, okay.
That they're all friends. They yeah, all know yeah, each other. Yeah. They actually all started out together, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I forget the name of the club. They, even though the Roots are from Philly, I think they would play some clubs up in New York.
Okay.
And the joke was that they were kind of the house band.
Uh-huh.
And whenever Mos Def would come on, they would be playing. Whenever Common would come on, this particular open mic or this particular club, the Roots would be playing behind them.
Yeah.
So the Block Party and this Dave Chappelle's Block Party was kind of like a reunion of this, you know, particular
yeah.
time, this club, whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we used to be like almost like the house band at this place. So I think they did know each other. And the other thing, too, is like, it wasn't like they were like, at least at that time, Mos Def and Common, I don't think, weren't that mainstream or well-known yet.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't like they were putting on like
right.
or a mainstream
yes.
like,
right, right,
like
right.
Eazy-E or like Ice right. Cube is on here, you know, to yeah. try to sell
sure,
records.
Sure.
It was like, no, these other like really awesome hip-hop artists are in here.
Yeah, not to, you know, diss Lil Wayne or
anything. Yeah. Diss him. I don't capped, dude.
I do feel like Lil Wayne is a... He's an interesting...
He's a sellout? I'm just kidding.
No, I don't... There's he's rich thesis material. To bust that out, I don't know that we've used that line yet. That could have been like the second our you know, alternate title for this podcast.
I like it.
No, but I think you're right. I don't think those dudes had achieved that amount of prominence. But you know, you look at Common now, and he's like, you know,
making movies.
He's making movies. He's going to the White House. You know, it's all this.
Is it the White House?
Yeah, there was this whole flap about, like, Fox News was like, you know, because he, you know, off of, like, Water for Chocolate, there was a track about Asada Shakur.
Yeah,
which like, yeah, I do too, but then, song. Like, apparently she might have killed a state trooper in New Jersey or something like that. Like, I mean, you know, who knows? But anyway, I had a point there.
But Fox News, like...
Oh, yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, he's glorifying cop killing, and they're inviting, you know, Barack is inviting him to the White House, and that's a travesty.
Well, this is hilarious, though. So, because, like, Water for Chocolate is a fucking awesome album.
It's great.
And
it was a podcast.
Yeah, we definitely can do that. But it was before he got, like, really big. It was actually kind of almost like his breakout album, I guess, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe that or the next one, right? The one he did after that. I forget. It was the first Common album I bought.
Yeah.
Was, like, Water for Chocolate. But it's funny. It's like, I just think about like some intern at Fox News having to listen to that album or something. You know, it's like, I don't know. It was so random. It's not something like some mainstream, again, like a Lil Wayne album or something. Right. You can go to like Tower Records easily buy. You know, yeah. It's just like someone had to look this up. How does Bill O'Reilly know about Common? He's a secret Common fan, I bet
you. He probably is. I mean, you know, why not? Why shouldn't he be? But
he should be.
He should be. But you know, as far as to combine the house band and the blowing up ideas, you know, the Roots are now the house band on Jimmy Fallon's show,
right?
Which is, and I haven't seen that show very much. I think Jimmy Fallon's funny, and you know, I hope he succeeds or whatever. And I think it's, what do you think that they're the house band on that show now?
I think it's cool. I think it's fine. I mean, it's, I mean, I guess it, you know, what we talked about last time, like, quote unquote, you know, is that considered a sellout move, whatever? I don't think it is. And just because it's like, again, it's not some big time mainstream show, though Jimmy Fallon is well known. It's not like it's like Jay Leno, you know, or like Conan, you know what I mean? It's more late night. Jimmy Fallon has a certain persona too, I think. He's not, I don't know. I mean, even though he's well known, there's some sort of like coolness to him, you know what I mean? He's not like kind of cheesy like Jay Leno, like, you know, I'm going to kind of make my show geared towards mainstream America.
So the question, though, then I'm curious what you think if the Roots were the house band for Jay Leno, like, what's the problem with that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess part of it is just what you would figure if they were the house band for Jay Leno, they would have to alter their style, I think.
Okay.
I think they would, you know what I mean? Have more of like this talk show type,
sure,
theme music, you, yeah, know what I mean? And not the style that they play. Though, again, I haven't really seen them. I've only seen a couple episodes, so
yeah.
I don't know if they've altered their style for Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Or yeah, if they're just playing what they usually play, you know?
I don't know. And I haven't seen that show to speak to it. But I, you know, I feel like I think that they should be free to make those choices, you know? And
yeah,
like,
yeah,
if they want to alter their music to do that, then that's fine too. You know, like, I don't want to begrudge their decision. I feel like there's a trend, or there's a tendency rather, for music listeners to deride the choices of their,
right,
the people that they follow.
And yeah, yeah,
I think, you know, you have to, it's hard to place some distance there because it's a very strong emotional bond that you share with a musician.
Yeah.
But I think if you want to be level-headed about it, or rather maybe you should be level-headed about it, because, you know, it's their career. It's, you know, the way they make their living. And
exactly.
It's their choices.
Exactly, exactly.
But I don't know. I mean, yeah, who knows? Maybe if I watched it, I would be like, oh, this is terrible. I can't believe they're doing,
right,
this.
Right, right.
But whatever.
So, you know, to rate this album.
Yes.
On our palm tree scale.
Yes.
What do you give this album?
We're on a scale of 5 palm trees.
5 palm trees.
I would give it a 4. I give it a solid 4 palm trees, which I think that's the highest thus far. Or I don't know. I should keep track.
I think it's the highest you've given so far.
Okay.
Yeah. So I give later that day, I round it up to a 4.
Okay. So what do you give this?
I think around the same. 4. I think it's a really solid 4. It's a, yeah, really solid 4.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is the impact of when I had it and listening to,
yes,
it, you know?
Yes,
yes. It's interesting. There's this effect of, you know, it's interesting that we've chosen this format of like an album to look at, because I feel like the album might be passe. Like, it may no longer be something that people look at as a product. You know, it's more the single,
right,
or the video or the movie. I don't know. But the album is not, I don't think, is considered, well, that's not true. Like, there's that, is that show Sound Opinions on Chicago Public Radio that looks at albums, but, and I'm sure all kinds of other people do too, yeah, but.
No, but you're right, though. I think the vast majority of people these days, they go on iTunes and they buy a single.
Yeah.
They don't buy the whole album. They're like, oh, I like this song from Bruno Mars.
Yeah. You know? And so, like, when my CD faltered and I was, like, going to YouTube, I was going to all the other Roots albums because that little, you know, sidebar gives me all these options. And then I'd be like, oh, but this track is from Phrenology is like so awesome. Or, you know, just like, or from Do You Want More, whatever. And then it's like, well, maybe Things Fall Apart wasn't that good because it didn't have this track. And I really like this track.
Right.
And like it splits your focus and you start to think about the music differently, and like I don't know, that's not a bad thing, it's just different. Like,
yeah,
so it I guess what I'm trying to say is it like alters the way in which I evaluate the album, but I don't want it to.
Right but that's part of it though. I mean, it's part of evaluating album, like the way it makes you feel, where you were when you heard it or when you were listening to it, you know, all that stuff affects it, so it's just natural, you know.
Sure.
But for me it's like it just, yeah, it's a solid four, and it just, I don't know, the album is, there's something about it, and I can't really describe it, but it puts me in a certain mood whenever I listen to it, and it's a good thing, you know, and it's just, you feel like, it's very urban.
Uh-huh.
I don't know a long way to describe it, like, I feel like, yeah, man, I should be in, like, New York City right now listening to this. I should like, in some big, bustling city, maybe even, you know, San Francisco, walking around, cruising the streets, like, it puts me in, but it's in a good way, it puts me in a good vibe, like, gets me ready for the night, like, if I'm going out that night.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If there's some albums that are, like, kind of poppy fun, there are some albums that are maybe jazzy, kind of, you know, laid back, gets you relaxed, but this one's, there's a little street to it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a little jazz to it.
And yeah.
It's just a cool combination, you know? And it's a good, for me, it's one of those things, like, gets me ready for a good night out, you know, something like that, you know?
No, definitely. And I feel like we should wind up since we did our rating, and that's usually how we end. But you bring up something interesting as far as, you know, we talked earlier about this is our first foray out of California, and, like, there's an East Coast sound there, is there not?
Yeah. Yes.
But what is that? How do you boil that down? I wouldn't be able to pinpoint it. I wouldn't be able to tell you, like, oh, the horn's right there? Or like, oh, that drum beat. Or like, oh, when he says
right.
There are a couple things that he says when he refers to places, South Philly, obviously, that, you know, kind of ground it on the East Coast. But is that all there is to it? You know, maybe it's the way they dress. Maybe, you know, it's the way they wear their hair. Maybe, you know, I don't know.
I think it, but you know what it is? I think it is the music, and I think it is the fact that they're a live band. Because I think, you know, you listen, so especially during that time period, you listen to a lot of West Coast hip-hop, and it's just like this studio-manufactured bass, kind of almost a disco funk kind of bass.
Yeah.
And this one's different. This is stripped down, a snare drum, you know, a real, like, you know, bass from a drum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of raw, stripped down feeling is the East Coast feeling.
Yeah. Got it.
Either, I don't know if it's Philly or if it's New York, but it makes it a distinct sound. And for me, it makes it a really, like, raw hip hop experience, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, I want to just throw my, like I said last time, my big ass headphones on and just listen to it, you know, and just kind of like get into it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So definitely, definitely that kind of experience. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a favorite of mine. And like we were talking about earlier, I think, you know, before we started recording, whenever you listen to it, you remember how much you like it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that's what's been fun about this podcast is, honestly, dude, I just don't listen to music enough anymore.
Same here.
And so it's good to have the opportunity to, like, plug back in.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Definitely. So anyway, on that note, how are you going to take us out?
I don't know.
A little freestyle? A little hop-a-thon? Yeah.
Well, you know, again, signing off from the Five and Dime. I'm just going to repeat that. That's my money line now. Signing off from the Five and Dime.
Keeping it raw or
keeping
something.
Keeping it raw. This, like, is the island style. Raw like sushi, I like that. This is the island style podcast. See you next time, folks. Thank you.
you took us to